I too wound the autumnal city, so howled out for the world to give him a name. The Indark answered with wind. All you know, I know. Careening astronauts and bank clerks glancing at the clock before lunch, actresses cowling at the light ring mirrors, and freight elevator operators grinding a thumbful of grease on a steel hand. Student riots. Know that dark women in bodegas shook their heads last week because in 6 months prices have risen outlandishly. How coffee tastes after you've held it in your mouth. Cold. A whole minute he squatted, pebbles clutched with his left foot, the bare one, listening to his breath sound tumble down the ledges. Beyond a leafy iris, reflected moonlight flittered. He rubbed his palms against denim. Where he was still. Somewhere else, wind whined. The leaves winked. What had been the wind was a motion and brush below. His hand went to the rock behind. She stood up, 24 feet away, wearing only shadows the moon dropped from a viney maple, moved, and the shadows shat on her.
To the six, we be in the mix with that rare candy paint job on the whip. I need food for the kids, money for the rent. Fuck a lockdown, baby, I can't do that shit. And I don't never vote, cause I'm fucking broke. And either way, I know the police ain't gon' leave me alone. On a plane, about to visit Glen Rock. Me crypto told me I should bring the Glock with me. So I packed up my piece and I'm sliding. Cause we might get caught up in a riot. Middle finger Trump, middle finger Biden. Fuck a left, fuck a right, is you riding? Know you love to see it, dudes rocking. Ain't no politics, baby, we just talking. From the birds to the bricks, we be in the mix. With that rare candy paint job on the whip, who you with?
Welcome back to the Gain of Fiction Lab. This is volume 30. It's been a while, but we're you know, when you turn 30, I tend to think life begins when you turn, or at least some part of life begins when you turn 30. But other people also call it dirty 30. Right, you'll see like those girls when they're like at a bar celebrating and they're like dirty 30. This book is dirty 30 that we're talking about. It's dirty. It's gross. It's nasty. Of course, we're talking about Samuel Delaney's Dahlgren, the 1975 Nebula Award winner. And to me, when I was reading it, and we're going to talk about what it is, what it's not, because everybody loves to tell you what it's not. And what I wanted to say about this was, like, I'm so glad that we have authors on here, because it's a book about writing. More so, like, to me, I was just like, wow, it's, or being creative and also trying to grow up at the same time, or deciding whether you need to or not. There's a lot of things that happen, but I have three writers, to be honest. I have three writers here. I don't know that I could call Cy an author yet, unless he's got some heat in the chamber that I don't know about. But he's
maybe
here.
Someday, yeah.
Maybe someday. Yeah, maybe someday. Yeah, you could talk about all the gay things you did back in the day. 900 pages.
Coming. It's
Yeah. Always coming. All right. But the yeah. Anyways, returning to the show, I have Matt Sinney, the host of Getting Lit podcast. But you're an author. You are a Delaney head. From what I've heard. But you may have heard him from such episodes like Alfred Bester's The Demolished Man. That was about a couple months ago that we did that, or I don't know. It's always a couple months to me. I have no idea when it actually was. But joining the show for the first time. Now, I asked, I was like, I'm always sheepish when I'm like, hey, does anyone want to read like a, you know, 900 page book that a lot that Philip K. Dick and Harlan Ellison didn't like? does anyone want to do that with me? And like four people were like, talk to Eddie. I was like,
that was funny.
I was like, all right. I was like, hey, yeah, Kelby, David. But you're part of the Broken River Collective.
And it's
Eddie Rathke. How you doing, dude?
Not too bad. Actually having a very weird weekend, even though it's I'm suddenly hosting Easter tomorrow for a bunch of people.
Tight.
And my brother's going through some disasters in his life, and that is the most stressful thing that's ever happened to me.
Hosting a party is terrible. I mean, I'm not like, like, it's fun once it happens. Usually once it happens, it's fine. But like the lead up is just like, everybody just treats it like this, like, I don't know. It's like, man, this five alarm fire and everybody, yeah. It's just like, and you're kind of just like, what if people just saw the way our house normally looked and like, yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. But yeah. No. And yeah. That's,
but as we discussed on an episode, I can't remember if it was on this or on my podcast, Glenn and his wife are really good people to have over for a party because they come early and help you set up. Apparently,
we're so on time. I'm a time lord. That's why I love books where time is manipulated. If you can tell me that time is not normal in a book, I'll read it. And a movie is the same way. But Eddie, I want to talk about, you are the most prolific Substack guy I've ever seen in my life. I get an alert. I get an alert all the time. Now you're covering Shogun. You're talking about your books. Are you serializing something on there? Is that like,
I was, and then I just stopped. Cause I like asked people, I was like, do you guys just want me to like write like finish the book and release it as a book? Or do you want to keep doing it weekly? And everyone was like, just write the fucking book. And you know, serializing is interesting. I always thought it would be fun and cool and kind of like fit my mode of writing well, because I like to write. I write a lot. But what I found out is that the idea of writing the same thing for like years in a row is like my nightmare. I feel like I want to write like 10 things this year. I don't want to write this one thing forever, even though I thought that's what I wanted to do.
Right. I do love the Substack medium for that, though, like to just kind of try stuff out.
Yeah.
And then like people just are like, hey, do something else. And you're like, all right, cool. Yeah, and then I love that.
Yeah. And that's like, I enjoy doing that through Substack. I think if I wanted to be more successful, I would just pick a lane and go. But instead, I write about, you know, 30 different topics. And if you want a novella length essay about a movie, I gotcha. If you want to,
I do like that. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want a 20-page essay about a video game from the 90s, I got that one too. You know, I just write whatever I feel like, and thankfully there's a lot of people who seem to like that. So
that's tight. And where can people find all that
stuff? Oh yeah, it's radicaledward.substack.com.
Yeah, I remember I thought it said a radical N-word one time when you said it once. I was like, damn, that's crazy.
Yeah. I was like, it's very Delaney-esque.
Yeah, oh, I was like, damn, dude. That would be the most... but, like, really going for it there. But
that would be so funny. I wonder if they would even let you do that.
I mean, it could be my name's Norbert, you know, like radical N-word. I don't know. Like, yeah, name's Neil, dude. Get your head out of the... your head out of the race for here, guys. But Matt, what are you working at? We don't talk enough about your work. You're like this, you're this guy, this prolific person that always wants to talk about what everyone else is doing. What are you doing?
I've got a few things like in the pipeline, so it's not really much to talk about. Like, I've got a novel that I'm just sending around to publishers here, and so nothing much happening on that kind of front. But yeah, and I've just started another one, so that's why I've got nothing to talk about, because I'm not quite as prolific as young Eddie here. But I always just sort of like just hunker down and don't like to talk about it too much. So yeah. I'll talk about it when it like comes out, and I'm sort of like going the traditional publishing route. So if it ends up being published, it'll be like 3 years away. Cause it takes so long. But yeah, I've been having a couple of bites down here at a few publishers, so that's really exciting. But mostly I've just been writing a new thing, focusing on the podcast, and that's pretty much all I've been doing.
I think that's a more normal way to treat writing. I know a lot of people are like, oh, I just started this thing, let me tell you about it. It's like, I don't care. Like, like if you've written 5 pages of a book, it's like, tell me when you've written 50. And then actually don't tell me.
Yeah, I was going to say don't.
Yeah, don't tell me. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, because I have written the first 5 pages of a lot of things.
Right.
And they are still 5 pages long, like 10 years later. You know, if I told people about everything I'm writing, it'd be retarded. Like, no one would want to talk to me, and I wouldn't want to talk to me. I'd be like, and so most people in my normal life don't, they don't care that I write. They don't read anything that I write. And it's like, I like that.
I like that too. Yeah.
My wife doesn't even read my books. She tried.
That's the best. That's the best though.
She tried 10 years ago when we were dating, and she read 2 pages and she was like, what is this? I like you, but I'm not going to read this. And I was like, yeah, yeah, don't.
No, there's, I would prefer for, you know, like my wife hears one half of every Rare Candy, not one half, two thirds of every Rare Candy episode. So, and she's just like, well, that sounded funny, you know? And I'm like, yeah, don't, you know, what is she going to do? Listen to the whole thing at work? Like, no, of course not. Like, I kind of like that, but yeah, it's funny. That's like why writing isn't, I like podcasting is the medium for me, because it's kind of like, you get to just every week be like, well, I'm working on something and I will put it out because that's what happened this week, you know? and like, that's what I love about it. Cause I have no patience for like, that's why I love, I actually probably revere authors and like directors more than most people, because I think it's so cool how patient they are and how committed to basically selling years of their prime a lot of times, like to just be like, well, this is gonna, like, you know, like I listened to a whole thing on like Tarkovsky and I was just like, wow, that guy literally was just like, I'm going to die making movies and I'm gonna die like losing money on, in communist Russia, he's like losing money. I was like, I don't even know how like I don't even know how that works. But yeah, just doing that, I'm like, I would never do that.
It's crazy. On a Wikipedia page, it's like, this project started in 2016 and it came out in 2023. Like, I can't even think on that time scale for like a movie or something, you know? It's crazy.
Yeah.
I didn't care about that in 2023. That's the problem, right?
Well, yeah, that's kind of what serializing a book made me realize, is I was like, man, this fucking sucks. Like, I just want, because way back when I, like the first few novels that I wrote, I basically wrote them in a week. So it's just like, I mean, I was single, didn't have any kids, I had nothing but alcohol and depression to fuel me, and I had buckets of that.
You're 87 octane, dude. Kickstart my heart. Yeah
And it's like I could sit down and write for 9 hours a day because I didn't have fucking anything else to do. But and so like the idea of even spending like, you know, 6 months writing a book back then, it would have been like, who would do that? Like, what a waste of your life. And then it's like, well, most people can't, you know, people have real lives to do. They can't just spend their whole day, every single day, writing a book.
Wow. Yeah, it's so true. Well, now, Eddie, you're covering William Gibson for like the whole year. Which I think is endearing, and I believe I'm going to be a part of. You'll have to remind me the book. I actually forgot which one, but I'm excited.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be until like September, so you got some time.
Again, this is my life, so just go ahead and just tell me when, and I'll do it. But yeah, it could be 2026. I'll commit to it. Like, it's fine. But yeah, I'm down. But no, William Gibson, I think, understood the Dahlgren better than I think 99% of people who have read it. He basically said it's a puzzle that you get to play with, but there's nothing to compare it to. There's nothing on the box to be like, oh, that's what it's supposed to look like. Dahlgren is a book that doesn't make sense per se. I'm using the kind of sci-fi community, which Matt and I were talking
about. They hated it.
The big names hated it. He won the award though. Like, I don't, how do you win? Nebula Award is so weird to me. Was it Nebula or Hugo that he won? It was Nebula, right?
It's Nebula, I think.
Nebula, okay. When you win that, like, is that lame when you win? I know, obviously it's good, but like, is it lame within the community? Oh, of course he won the Nebula, you know?
Well, so there's kind of like, you know, the Hugo is voted on by like fans and essentially the community. So it's like a lot of the people who are voting are, of course, other writers, because that's kind of the interesting thing about science fiction is they're actually fans of books. Shout out to people who actually like to read books, who write books. So like the Hugo is, in some ways, it's like the one that people call like, you know, the big one, but I kind of think it's to some extent kind of dumber, because it's like, all you have to do to vote is just like give them some money, essentially. It's like, I'm gonna go to Worldcon, so let me vote. And that's why like 10 years ago it's called like the Sad Puppy Controversy, is these guys just like pushed a slate. They just all voted for like their friends' books. And it kind of worked. And they're like, oh wait, we can't allow people to like scam the system. So like the Nebula is more like similar to probably like the Pulitzer or the National Book Award, where it's like, you know, a panel of experts or judges decide who wins the book awards.
That's okay. So that's interesting. Now, but William Gibson brought it, said it's a puzzle. So it's a puzzle that can't be solved, but you're going to enjoy just tinkering around with the pieces, which is exactly how you should read this. Mm-hmm. Right now, I most of the books we cover on this, I'll be like, yeah, just pick it up and read it. It's really good. This, to me, Dahlgren is, and we did an episode on the Brothers Karamazov. It's the same thing. Like, make sure you're ready. Make sure you're ready. Like, when you're like, I got a month, maybe 2 months to just sit down and do like a stream of consciousness thing. Like, these are the books. Like, don't just pick this up and be like, well, I'll read this in a couple of weeks. You can. I mean, I guess it's physically possible, but I wouldn't recommend it. And make sure you've gone through a few things in life when you've read it. If you're still in academia, don't read this. Mm-hmm. Like, I will say that. If you're like 28 and like in some form of grad school or whatever, like that never-ending prolonging of your childhood, like, don't do that. Like, don't pick this book up. It's not gonna make any sense to you.
Because it'll stop you from doing what you're doing.
Do you think they'll get through it? I bet they put it down after 200 pages.
Well, so I think that Dahlgren is kind of one of these books where it's like, you know, the abyss stares back, but in this case it's not an abyss, it's a bunch of hippies fucking. And
which is an abyss.
Yeah.
You know, this book's famous for people not finishing it too, I think, is it's known that people read the third of it and never pick it up again. So I'm glad we're all here.
Which is crazy because the first third of it is sick.
Yeah, like, it's great. Right.
It's actually the most like formulaic novel part of it is the first third. It's really weird to like, I could understand, which is funny because the first third of it is like, in my opinion, like really fun, fast paced, a lot of things happening, secretions of fluid, a lot of these things. And then Delaney, I feel like around page like 440, he puts up the paywall. He's like, all right, guys, we're switching to the Patreon. Denny's coming in. It's like meth out 15-year-old twink time. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he does that. And then it's like, that is where like I think people would quit if they actually got there. But you know, we'll harken back to this a few times. But to set the scene for what Dahlgren, I'll do my best to summarize the plot here in about a minute, okay? And I want to just
the time starts now.
We'll be avant-garde in the way we address our favorite parts. I want to hear it all, guys. So the kid, right? We have this guy who, it starts off with a quote-unquote dream sequence. And it's where a boy who we think is young, mixed race, like quasi-native kid is just like, sees like this kind of like goddessy, like forest goddess looking girl, has sex with her to completion, that matters, and then he finds like an optical chain as she guides him to this optical chain in a cave. And you think, you're like, whoa, this is gonna get crazy, like we're gonna be in the forest like doing all this, like, you know, nymphs and all these things. The next thing you know, the kid is in a artichoke truck, like on some Steinbeck shit, and he like goes into a city called Bologna, which he hears is guarded off by the National Guard, complete like absolute decimated big city, but it's one of the 10 biggest cities in America. He then finds a hippie commune, which he's like, this is cool but not really for me. He meets a friend who's like the Art Bell of the community, Tack Loofer, who's got all the cool technology and all the gay porn, gets his dick sucked by him, and then kind of like, I guess this is what I have to do. It's like taking your shoes off when you get into somebody's house. Yeah. and then links up with the Scorpions, has this little girlfriend named Lanya the whole time, links up with the Scorpions, becomes the king kind of that of the Scorpions, who are kind of like the warriors aesthetically. As of there, the whole time he realizes, I'm a writer, and I found this notebook and I'm gonna write poetry and I am gonna get it published, even though I don't, like, am I even good? There's a guy named Roger Calkins that runs the city of Bologna. Everybody else has seen him except the kid, I feel like. And look, I'll stop there for now. When did you guys first read this, both of you guys?
2012. I just looked it up.
When the world ended.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I had lived in Korea for a year doing super cool normal things. And I read 5 Delaney books while I was there.
Wow.
I read Triton and then the Neveriona.
Is Triton good?
Series. Yes.
Okay. No, I have a copy. I was just wondering.
It's kind of like you could. Matt, have you read Triton?
No, I haven't read Triton. I've read Navrariona though.
I would say Triton in some ways is like Dahlgren miniaturized and set in space. So he calls it basically a companion piece to Ursula K. Le Guin's The Dispossessed, which is called like an ambiguous utopia. And his what the fuck does he call it? Like a man, I can't remember what he called it. He calls it like something utopia, like a heterodox some fucking thing. Some smart college word.
Yeah. And like word, yeah.
Yeah, Triton has a very has some very Dahlgren scenes. Like they're just like chilling on this, I believe that it takes place on a space station, and like they see basically a space attack happen above them, like in space, and like there's a war going on, and someone at the party who's like a government official just gives a very long explanation, and you know as the reader that it's absolute bullshit, because how could he know what's happening? Like he's literally standing next to him. He's just like, okay, everybody, let me explain what we just saw. And it's like, you don't know. Like, you literally can't know. Like it just happened. It's a terrorist attack.
Yeah, that's interesting. Oh, but anyways, I'm sorry. You read five books of Delaney's books in Korea. Did you just get like completely Delaney pilled? Were you just like, oh my gosh, like
I hadn't read any science fiction since I was like 12. I was reading lots of dumb smart people books that they tell you to read when you want to be a famous writer someday. And then I just,
that's the one, like, David's reading those now, right?
Yeah, what an idiot.
Got his ass.
Owned. But I picked up a China Mieville book sort of just kind of arbitrarily, and I was like, man, this fucking rules. Like, why have I not been reading books like this for the last 10 years? Like, these are way better. And so I basically just searched, like, you know, who are the best science fiction and fantasy writers, and I read Gene Wolfe while I was out there. I read like 15 Ursula K. Le Guin books. I was just swallowing them, guzzling them down. But cool. Delaney, he's an interesting one. Yeah, Navarriona was I think it's still my favorite. I feel like if I read it again, I wouldn't like it though.
I like those two. They're sort of like a sword, his version of Sword and Sorcery, but yeah, like more black and gay.
Yeah, basically. I think I was primed for it because I had been reading so much like modernism and postmodernism that like this extremely metafictional sword and sorcery series that happens to be the first in it. There's the first novel about the AIDS epidemic ever written. And it's a fantasy novel, but also it takes place in the present.
Yeah. I like that. I love one foot in, one foot out. That's my favorite genre of like, kind of like, if we're going to change a world and take you somewhere else, I kind of like to keep one foot in.
Yeah. And it's like it's one of those books where like the foreword and the appendix are part of the book. They're not like comments. They're not like what you think those should be. They're like literally still part of the novel. It's an interesting, it also ruined his career.
Is that right?
It sold so poorly that he was basically kicked out of publishing.
Getting kicked out of publishing, it's just that it feels like
a blessing.
No, it does, but it's also kind of like, it feels like getting kicked out of like a kid's sports game, like a lot where it's like I'm right, that umpire sucks. You know what I mean? Like, it's also like yeah, but yeah. You know, it's
that is basically what it is.
It's ripping the Band-Aid off. Like it's kind of like, let's get this over with. You know, but Matt, look, not to put you on blast, but you're the gay guy here. So I just want to know. Like we had to have adequate representation for a Delaney episode, which I'm glad you were able to fit this in, because I know it's a tough ask for someone to do this book when they do their own literature series. So it's always tough, but your genesis into the Delaney, I'd love to know about this.
Well, look, yeah, it probably does have a little bit to do with the gayness, because I was a big science fiction fan when I was younger, and like I would read stuff like Eddie, actually very similar trajectory in a way, with like China Mieville being the gateway drug, if you will, because he's not, I don't think he's gay anyway, but he like
that
goes
very gay though,
that right? Name is very gay. But I think drag. it's just my yeah. parents were Marxist anarchists, kind of that kind of gay, you know.
Yeah,
so not like the
interesting,
not like
yeah.
the sodomy gay, kind yeah. of gay. Yeah. yeah. So
I feel like if he came out as gay, there would not be a moment where I would be like, oh, what, him?
Yeah. You'd be like, yeah, my friend China is gay.
Yeah,
that's crazy. He just dragged too. Insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Spells it with a Y now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. if you see his all the photos, he's like really like jacked and like has a shaved head and stuff.
Oh, that can't
kind
be
of,
gay.
Yeah. Kind of.
Yeah. No, he couldn't be gay then. Yeah, you're right.
No. Yeah. I was gonna say like he's got this like tough kind of exterior, but like yeah, that yeah. is actually a very gay. Sort
yeah.
of
yeah. yeah. Not meeting the allegations.
Yeah, but so yeah, he would go into like it'd be all this amazing like visuals, phantasmagoria, like really interesting kind of science fictional scenarios, and then there'd be a bit of gay sex now and then, and like that was just really like mind blowing nice. To me. I was like, I would read these science fiction stories, and they were all like sort of like you know, heterosexual romances in among, and which is I don't have a problem with, and I'm not doing the whole I need to feel represented thing, yeah, yeah. but like I didn't know that that was an option, that like there was like other kinds of queer things in yeah. like science fiction especially. And so I
fellas.
Sorry,
there's a bunch of gay fellas over there.
Yeah, yeah. And so I kind of dug into that, and I think I actually found Delaney via Harlan Ellison, who me and Glenn did an episode on Uncle Harlan last year. And because Harlan Ellison anthologized Samuel Delaney, I think in the first Dangerous Visions, which was sort of like a collection of stories that was part of the new wave of science fiction. It had like Delaney, I think probably Dish was in there as well. That's how I kind of came across Thomas Dish. Like crazy gay guys writing science fiction became like a kind of reading trajectory for a couple of years there. And so that's when I kind of read Delaney and Dish and a few other people who are kind of on the, and just like stuff like Joanna Russ's The Female Man and things like that, which is an amazing book.
It is. I love the book.
Yeah, and he gives a lovely homage to those two as well, Dish and Joanna Russ, in the kind of first little bit when Tack, I think, has a couple of their books on his nightstand.
Oh, nice.
Which is really cute. I like when
next
you...
Next to the
when
George people put... Harrison dong picture.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's my story with Delaney, and I just love him because we are like... There's some moments when I'm just like, this is really weird, especially a lot of the sex stuff, but that I'm just like, that's too much even for me. And you know, there are some books that are not necessarily science fiction but quite transgressive. Hog comes to mind, which, by the way, aptly named.
I heard that's the one. That's level. Yes. This is level 4. Like that's level 5.
Yes, there's literally a character called Shit, for good reason. but like the nail biting as well. Like there's so much nail biting in this, and also in other. And I bite my nails really badly.
Me too.
Like I know you do, Glenn, as well. But like
alpha. It's an alpha move. I've heard.
It's just like literally me. But then he's got like weird, gross sex stuff that kind of disturbs me, but also like I just love to read, get titillated by it. Like not in this book, the dick cheese, the fucking in another one, Through the Valley of the Nest of Spiders.
That's like the shout out to TPN. That's what that I first heard of him through that.
Yes, which is another rambling, like long epic, full of like gay sex. The main character is constantly sucking the dick cheese off like homeless black men under a bridge, like nice. And then there's like excellent. And then what he's really into is like boogers, like if someone like pulls a dry booger out and eats it, it's like the most sexy, like the attention he gives to this, the eroticized kind of booger stuff is just like But it is fun to read. So like, yeah, I just love him for his extremity, you know?
Yeah, I love this. No, sorry, go ahead, please.
I just feel like this, if you're reading this as like a gay teen, you know, at any era, it was just jaw on the floor. Like, it must have been like the Beatles for like everyone else.
Being gay was science fiction until 2005.
Yes.
Yeah, basically.
Like, no, it was. It was kind of like there were, because I, as a kid, like young, like sports playing, like straight guy, like you always heard, like, it was like, damn, like there's a pitcher and there's a catcher and like there's all these, like, and it's like there's a blueprint, you wear hard hats. Like, it's like all this like crazy, this like crazy shit that happens.
"Arthur," she said, followed by what sounded more like a comma of address than of apposition. "He's outside." "Ma'am?" "Arthur is outside in that," she said. "He goes out every day. I can watch him from the window turn down 44th there and disappear into the smoke. Like that." Outside the balcony door, buildings were blurred. "We've moved." She watched the fog for the length of 5 breaths. "This building, it's like a chessboard. Now we occupy a different square. We had to move. We had to. Our position before was terrible." Smoke pulled from the window, uncovering more smoke. "But I didn't know the move would cost so much. And more, I am not prepared for this. I'm really not. Arthur goes out there every day and works in systems, Maitland systems, engineering. Then he comes home." She leaned forward. "Do you know? I don't believe all that out there is real. Once the smoke covers him, I don't believe he goes anywhere. I don't believe there's any place to go." She sat back. "I don't think I believe there ever was. I'm very much in love with that man, and I'm very much in awe of him. It frightens me how much I don't understand him. I often suspect that he isn't happy, that going out to work every day, and that," she shook her head slightly, "that it doesn't give him anything real. The inner things he needs. Whatever it is he does out there, it frightens me. I picture him going to a great empty building, filled with offices and desks and workbenches and technician shops and drafting tables and filing cabinets and equipment closets. No people. He walks up and down and looks into open office doors. I don't think he opens the closed ones. Sometimes he straightens a pile of papers on somebody's desk. Sometimes he looks through a pile of circuit plans. But he puts them back neatly. That's all. All day. With no one else there.
No one else there.
No one else there. No one else there.
But look, let's talk about this. Let's dissect this book a little bit.
Let's go knuckle deep in that book.
Yeah, I'm ready. immediately, like immediately through the first couple hundred pages of this book, I'm thinking, okay, I see Thomas Pynchon. I see Thomas Pynchon, where it's just like, Thomas Pynchon could make like a room, an entire world, like where it's like, yeah, and then you walked in this room and it's like, you didn't know that room was there. And then it was like, whoa, that room's there. And there's like a guy there that has like a potion, or, you know, there's all these things that Thomas Pynchon does mixed with J.G. Ballard. That's where I think this is at, because J.G. Ballard has that, like, well, this Lego piece fits that Lego piece and they're having sex now and like nobody cares. But it's just this, like, this fits here, so they're having sex. And that's like what I would put it at, personally, to me. And I love gay sex in books. I want more. In movies, I'm like, come on, guys. But in books, I'm like, more. I read The Shards and I was like, more, Brett, you know. and I was super into it. I don't know. It's weird. It's so taboo, because like, that's why you read books, is you're like,
yeah,
show me something that I'm not supposed to see.
Because no one can overhear it, and you know no one else is going to read it, and you're no one's like, hey, read this book, and they never will. And it's kind of just, it's
in and then when head. You know somebody who's read it, you're like, you're nasty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, you that's like that book? Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, shit. You know? Like,
that's the thing. I'm scared to talk about this book with anyone in real life. You know? It's like, oh, yeah. That's, it was crazy, right?
Well, and I felt like, seriously, no joke, like a real connection, like a disturbing connection to the kid. Like, it was, it's fucked up. Like why? Because I do think this is more of a coming of age book, maybe with a UM instead of OM. But like, it's one of those books. But he stumbles into this town called Bologna, and it's like kind of a New York, a Chicago. It's a big city. You could tell this was like a big time, like, you know, trains taking everybody into work every day. One of those big towns. They often list it as one of the, you know, 10 biggest cities. They keep talking about it. And nobody quite knows where it is. And right when the kid gets there, he gets like this thing called an orchid, right? And it's like this like kind of like, I guess, many bladed knife thing that attaches to your wrist. And he's just like, do I need this? They're like, probably. And they're like, it gets wild out there. And but immediately, like, the first, he kind of sees a city that's too big for him at first. He's like, ah, shit, more trouble in my life. Even though I don't really remember my life, there's more trouble. I know I'm from some sort of chaos. And when he meets Tak Lufer, who, you know, I pictured like this John Goodman character in my head. I don't know why. I just pictured him. And Tak Lufer is this. He knows the town. He's just, I know everything. He's the guy on the front porch that knows when neighbors go on vacation and he like puts their trash cans away. He has that like sort of presence in Bologna. Non-threatening. He doesn't want to do anything except suck the dick of the new guy that comes in. You know, I feel like when a girl comes to Bologna, he's like,
yeah,
shit.
He's like, are you like, sure you don't have a dick?
Yeah. Like, are you that confused? Could we work something out? Yeah. Nobody comes here with a clear mind. Yeah. But, you know, like, so yeah, he's one of these guys. He's got like the Art Bell, like ham radio set up in his house. It's really cool. And I love the idea right away. Samuel Delaney's idea of like a quote unquote straight guy, because you don't know the kid has been doing this his whole life until later. A quote unquote straight guy kind of just being like, well, if I'm staying here, I guess I have to get my dick sucked by a guy. the way it's bargained in the head is so funny to me. Like, it's just a total gay guy writing a book about a straight guy stumbling.
Yeah.
Like Clint Eastwood drifter stumbling in town, you know?
Yeah.
I love that. I right then and there, I'm like, I'm so sold on this. I don't care where this takes me.
Yeah.
And the way the blowjob works is just like it's weird. It's written by a gay guy, but it's like not erotic. Like, it's kind of like just like, and then Tak was like, ugh, you know, like it's just like,
see, this is one of the things I like about Samuel Delaney as a gay writer, because like so much gay writing or queer writing now, because like, you know, you can't just be gay, you have to be queer now, but what it does this thing with sex in sex scenes and stuff, which I find very infuriating. It like eliminates all of the abjection and like bodily stuff from sex, and like makes it like this like Vaseline lens sort of like really kind of not necessarily romantic, but it's always like more meaningful. I'm talking about in the more literary sort of genre. And it's just like, rather than just the mechanics of it, which like, as a, if you're a, you know, promiscuous gay man, which lots of us are, it does become kind of mechanical.
Once you
play it. So it's just like, you don't have to do all of this, like, beautifying the abject that I think a lot of literary writers do with the sex scenes. And I imagine they do that with lots of straight, like, sex scenes in more literary stuff as well. But like, he's just like, it's just sex, you know, and that's what's great about it.
Well, and I think what you find, like, you know, and, you know, female romance writers know this. It's like, if you just describe the mechanics of sex, people are going to get off on it. Mm-hmm. If you're like, oh, and he touched me like a feather, it's like, no, like, put a fist in there, man. Yeah. just go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that scene is so funny, because like, he's just like, where am I gonna sleep? And Tak's like, I don't know. You know, like, it's like, I like that. Like, it's funny. It's good. It's just like, I can't imagine like just being like one of these people, like, I'm a sci-fi writer, and I look in the store and I see this like cool like poem kind of, but it's small, you know, like a small in length. It's kind of a chodish tome, and you're
appropriate. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there's a sci-fi writer named Chodish Tome, by the way.
He's a Soviet bloc sci-fi.
Yeah. He just got his books last year. They're great. There's like 8 Tarkovsky movies on his that we haven't seen. But you look at it and you're like, oh, what's in here? And then you're just like, oh man, that's not what I wanted. I wanted aliens or something, you know. But
yeah, yeah.
This book, like I was talking about with Matt before we started, like I feel like this is really a literary novel that has some surrealism to it, and it's marketed as sci-fi because Samuel Delaney was pretty prolific, you know, here and there in the genre. So that's the selling point of the book, but it kind of leaves people in no man's land of who should pick this book up, because there's people who talk about, I haven't read any of these. I haven't read Ulysses. I haven't read any of these things, but people talk about like mythology. There's a lot of mythology references in here. I think even Bologna has some word thing that means like sadness or something. There's this like prefix suffix thing that I didn't care super much about, but it was kind of there, but it's definitely meant for like the more literary fiction audience, I think.
Yeah, so I'd say like, yeah, people were not primed for this because Delaney wrote like 10 novels in like 8 years, and 3 or 4 of them won awards, and they were mostly like adventure science fiction novels.
Yeah,
and then he hasn't. Yeah, exactly. And the Einstein Intersection, I think, is it might be the best Delaney.
Yeah, it looks sick. Good.
It's super short too. I mean, it is in some ways the anti Dahlgren. You know, Dahlgren. So he wrote like 10 books in 8 years or whatever. Didn't write anything for 5 years, and then he comes out with this massive book, and people are like, "Oh shit! Like, all right, let's do it." And then you get into it, and so Gene Wolfe is somewhat similar in that, like, he's most famous for the Book of the New Sun, but before that, he wrote a book called Peace, which is essentially a very intense postmodern novel. And you see that, like, had his career just veered slightly in one direction, we'd think of him more like Thomas Pynchon and William Gaddis, instead of like one of the most important science fiction writers. And here's kind of like a similar pivot point for Delaney. It's like he could have and kind of did just go in this direction. You know, he wrote one more science fiction novel, then a sort of a weird postmodern metafictional fantasy series that destroyed his career, and then he just wrote a bunch of pornographic novels. But it's like, it's interesting to see those two writers who are writing basically at the same time, how one did make the choice to go like the postmodern route, and it was, in some ways you could say the worst decision he made, because Dahlgren sold 1 million copies and then his career was basically over. Gene Wolfe, his career, he did all right.
Yeah, that's true. So Tack sends Kid off. He's like, okay, Kid stumbles out. I love that sequence of like knowing how many steps, and it's dark. You learn how dark Bologna is, and I mean that literally. Like, it is dark. There's a lot of black people, and then there's a lot of smoke everywhere. So real tough to see things. And there's all these things, he stumbles out into the world. We see the scorpions, we see these like projected, the first real like fantastical element of it, which actually isn't fantastical at all, but to the eye at first is these projectors that these scorpions have of like mantises. Because at first I'm like, damn, are there mantis aliens in this? And it's like, nah, it's like this battery powered thing that just
holograms.
You know what's funny is I've read this novel before, but when I was rereading, I was like, wait a fucking second. Did I misunderstand this 10 years ago?
Is this some like other world, like Graham Hancock shit that's happening?
Right, it's like he describes a dragon, and I was like, wait, there are dragons in this book? Like, what?
You just listened to a preview of one of our premium episodes, and to get access to the full thing, you got to be a paid subscriber to the Rare Candy Substack. That's rarecandy.substack.com. Only $5 a month or $55 for the whole year. You get 1 month free if you do the whole year. You get access to premium Rare Candy episodes, my podcast, The Glenn Word, and whatever the hell else we want to charge people for. Again, that's rarecandy.substack.com. Thanks again.